It's time for CBJ in 30, presented by Telhio Credit Union. Find us on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play Music, YouTube, and TuneIn. The easiest thing to do is tell Alexa or Siri to play CBJ in 30. Here's your host, Bob McGilligan.
I thought it was time that you and I get back together. It's been a couple of weeks. It seems like it's been a long couple of weeks since we last talked, and that was around the NHL draft. But here we are in late October, almost November. In normal times, the Blue Jackets would be playing by now. They'd be almost a month into the regular season. We'd be talking about the biggest win or the biggest loss or the latest win or the latest loss. But here we are sitting and waiting to find out when the regular season is going to start, when training camp is going to open, all of these things, all back to this uncertainty. And that was the whole thing about the playoffs. It was great to get back to play. It was great to call games. It was great to watch games, listen to games, talk hockey day in and day out. That was awesome. But we all knew that when it was over, we would enter that period of uncertainty once again. And here we are, just waiting to find out what's going to happen. Well, coming up, I don't know if I have some full answers for you, but I at least have some information for you coming up. I will talk with, I just said coming up twice within like 5 seconds. See, you see what I mean? I'm out of sorts. I'm out of practice. I got to get back into it. Anyway, this is what I was trying to say. Later in the show, I'm going to be joined by Mike Russo. He writes for The Athletic, and he covers the Minnesota Wild, but he also covers the NHL as a whole. And last week, he talked with Bill Daly, the NHL deputy commissioner, about return to play, when it might happen, how it might happen. So I'll talk with him about that, and he can get you filled in on that discussion and what might happen in the NHL. Before I talk to him, I'm going to talk with a local kid who was drafted by the Blue Jackets and has just signed his first professional contract. And that's Carson Meyer, and I'll tell you more about that in just a minute. But right now, I've got to tell you about Telhio Credit Union, because without Telhio Credit Union, I'm not here talking to you. It is the fine folks there that make this show possible. And you know what else they could make possible for you? They could make it possible to have your money in the right place so that you can get, as they say, the biggest bang for your buck. What kind of services does Telhio Credit Union offer? Why should you put your money there? What perks are there that you're not getting where you are right now? You can find the answer to those questions and many more just by going to their website at telhio.org. You can surf around, click on the different tabs, find out what it is that you want to know. And if you can't find the answer for some reason, they have a live chat option right there on the screen. Somebody will pop up and help you out with whatever the question is that you have. Telhio Credit Union, find them online at telhio.org. Carson Meyer is a former sixth-round draft pick of the Columbus Blue Jackets, but more than that, he's a Columbus kid. He comes from nearby Powell, which is a Columbus suburb. So he's been a Blue Jackets fan all of his life. He came up playing youth hockey. He played in the Blue Jackets AAA organization, and now he has signed a one-year contract with the Cleveland Monsters. It's an American Hockey League contract, and it has him in the Blue Jackets system. I had a chance to catch up with Carson Meyer and talk about, oh, and by the way, I should have mentioned that he just finished his collegiate career at Ohio State. I mean, this guy is Ohio through and through. I had a chance to catch up with him and talk about the way the college season ended and talk about signing this new contract and much, much more. Here's Carson Meyer. Well, Carson, 2020 has been such a weird year for so many people, but you know, there are so many stories about missed opportunities or unfinished business, and you have your own list of missed opportunities, unfinished business. The opportunities weren't missed because of you. It was because of the COVID-19. You were playing over to Ohio State. That season ended. In a normal year, you would have finished playing your college hockey. You probably would have went to Cleveland on a tryout with the Monsters, get a little taste of pro hockey. But the brakes were put on all of that. That's the bad news. The good news is, congratulations to you. You signed a one-year AHL deal with the Cleveland Monsters. Just looking back at the last couple of months, how frustrating has it been and how exciting has it been all at the same time to go through what you've gone through?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it was definitely frustrating at first. you know, not getting the chance to close out my college career and see, you know, how far we could go as a team, because we were really hitting our stride in the Big Ten playoffs there. We just came off a big sweep against Wisconsin, and we were getting ready to play at Nationwide, actually, in the semifinals against Michigan, which would have been an awesome game. And, yeah, just not having the chance to see how good we really were is kind of what has been the most frustrating throughout the summer. And then, like you said, not getting the opportunity to turn pro right after and, you know, get my feet wet while I'm, you know, playing really good hockey and stuff. So it's definitely been a long summer having to wait for that. But that being said, you know, it's been a bit of a blessing in that I've had plenty of time to train. I've gotten to spend tons of time with my family that I maybe wouldn't normally have gotten to do. And yeah, it's overall mostly frustrating, but at least we're getting closer to what we think is the start of the season now.
Yeah, I hope so too. We're all sitting here doing the same thing, waiting to get a date, waiting to know when training camps start and all of that stuff. You know, you mentioned how tough it is to leave your collegiate career and not know how good you were. And in some ways, I mean, yes, you're a guy that you were a draft pick and you've signed a pro contract now, all of that stuff. But how much of that do you think you're going to look back even years from now and say, doggone, I wish I could have finished with my buddies. I wish we could have seen exactly how good we could have been.
Yeah, I think that's probably something that's going to, you know, I'll maybe think about for years and years down the road. But, you know, you always hear control what you can control. There's nothing good's going to come from sulking over it. But it definitely does stink that we didn't get that opportunity together, because obviously worked really hard all season.
Well, your entire hockey life has big Columbus ties, because, first of all, you're from Powell. And then, you know, here you are, you played your youth hockey here. You played your collegiate hockey at Miami and then Ohio State. Now you're signing a contract with Cleveland. You were drafted by the Blue Jackets. Holy cow. You can't get out of the state, can you?
No, I can't. It's actually funny. At some point, I think I'll play in every city here in Ohio.
let me ask you, let's go back to the very beginning of it. When you first started skating, where were you skating? Did you start at the Chiller North?
I think I started at the Chiller Dublin. I think that's where most of my hockey was when I was just getting started. And it wasn't until, you know, a lot at Worthington too, at that bubble over at Worthington. And then it wasn't until maybe U16s or U18s that we started doing a lot downtown at Ice House. It was so mostly Dublin growing up, I think.
And I started to laugh because for those that, and I know they've had to redo that bubble, the ice works up in Worthington, and I haven't been there since they redid it. But I know when my son was playing, anytime something on the schedule was there, I knew it was an extra layer of clothing. Yeah. I knew it wasn't going to be fun. I was better off to wait outside and I would be warmer than being inside. You talk about hopefully looking back, even like right now. I mean, you can look back at that and say, man, where I started and where I am, not too bad.
Yeah. Yeah. That place was freezing growing up. Still is a bit cold, but it's definitely a lot better after the renovations. But I don't know. You don't give yourself much time to look back and see where you've come from. But, you know, I am, you know, proud of myself. And I think it's pretty cool looking back at how far of a journey, you know, it's come a long way.
Do you remember maybe how old you were, or what level you were playing at when both you decided and somebody else decided that, hey, this kid has got some talent and we think that he can play at a high level? Do you remember what age you were when, you know, you start the travel programs, what set you up for the AAA and then everything after?
I would say probably my first year of U18 with Ed Ginger. Before that, you know, I was a good player, but I was never, you know, the best on the team. I was always kind of middle of the pack, and a lot of it had to do with just being a shorter player, like one of the smaller guys on the team. And then, my second year, U16 with Perry Ganter, I got drafted to the USHL, but I got drafted pretty late, like the 10th round. And then, so I came back and played U18. And that year with Ed Ginger, I think I really probably developed the most of any year. And at that point I started to, you know, I knew I could play it in the USHL, and I started to get a lot of offers from schools, and that's when I kind of thought, you know, maybe I can go kind of far with this sport.
You know, can you explain, because the process is, you know, like college football fans, you go to high school, you get out of high school, you go to a college and you play. If you're good enough, you go to the NFL. It's similar but different in hockey because, as you're talking about, you're playing on a U18 program, then you go to the USHL, then you wind up in college. For people that don't really understand it, can you walk us through that process?
Yeah, so it's a little difficult because there's so many different routes, as you know, in hockey. You know, for instance, like Roslovic went right to, when he was, I think, 15 or 16, went to the U.S. program and started to play for them. There's also the USHL route, which a majority, pretty much everybody in the USHL goes to play D1 college. Or there's like the major junior route, like the OHL in Canada, which is what Cole Sherwood did. So, you know, I finished high school and played U18 my senior year of high school with Ed Ginger. And then after that year, I took basically a gap year and played out in the middle of Nebraska at Tri-City Storm for 1 year. And then there I committed to Miami. And after my 1 year at Tri-City, I went into Miami for 2 years and then transferred to Ohio State.
Was that a was that an easier or a tough transition for you to move from Miami to Ohio State?
I would say it was easy. It definitely helped being close to home. And I got to live in a house with like 7 teammates right off the bat. So I got to know everybody really quickly. And then, you know, one of my best friends from home, Austin Pooley, was on the team. So it was actually a fairly easy transition, but on the ice, it did still take me a little bit to get my feet under me.
Well, you obviously made that transition, made that adjustment, whatever you had to do. And now you've signed a contract with the Cleveland Monsters. Let me ask you about Ohio State hockey, though, because there's a good men's program. There's a very good women's program. Does it fly under the radar in Columbus?
I think so. I mean, it's obviously a big sports town, but we've got, you know, the Blue Jackets right down the road and Ohio State football and Ohio State basketball. So the hockey games, you know, they still get a pretty good crowd. I think like 5,000 or 6,000, but it's definitely under the radar compared to the other Ohio State sports. And I think just the fact that we have an NHL club right down the street, but you know, Steve Rolick's done a great job with the program. And, you know, I think they've been top 10 for the last 5 years or something like that. And I actually just saw right before this call that they came out with the preseason rankings and OSU was ranked 10 once again for men's. I haven't seen women's, but I know the women's are always up there.
Did you have much interaction with the women's program there? You guys, I mean, kind of a couple different rinks there, but how much camaraderie was there?
Yeah, we're pretty good friends with their team. I mean, for instance, I was just up, one of my teammates at OSU, Brendan Kearney, his girlfriend Elise was on the women's team, and we just spent the weekend at Kelly's Island at her place last weekend. So we're pretty good friends with a lot of them. And, you know, obviously we have tough schedules, both of us, so we don't get to hang out a lot, but we know them pretty well.
Talking with Carson Meyer, he was a Blue Jackets draft pick. He has signed a contract with the Cleveland Monsters, just waiting for the American Hockey League season and the NHL season to get started. Carson, being drafted by the Blue Jackets, just that experience, your hometown team picking you in the sixth round, the moment that happened, what was that like for you?
That was probably the best moment of my life, I would say. That was definitely something I'll remember forever. And it was a bit of a stressful day because I had talked to a number of teams, and, you know, I thought I was going to get drafted, but I knew it wasn't going to be till later round. So I didn't know for sure I was going to go. And I tried not to watch it all day, but obviously that didn't work out. And I ended up just sitting with my family on the couch and watching most of the draft. And then, you know, I just remember when they called my name, my parents and sister getting up and being super excited. And then they took me out to a nice dinner at Hyde Park that night. My mom actually got 2 reservations at the day of the draft. And one was for celebrating, and we were going to Hyde Park. And the other was if things didn't go as well. And I think it was just going to be an average dinner, maybe the Cheesecake Factory or something.
Hey, that's not average. By the time you read the menu, it might be your next draft year, for crying out loud. So now you've signed with the Monsters. How excited are you about that? You know you're going to play pro hockey. Again, it's going to be within the Blue Jackets organization. It's going to be just a couple of hours from here. Your family's going to be able to watch you play. What's your level of excitement right now?
I'm really excited. And, like we keep saying, I wish I could just get started already and finally play professional hockey, because it's something I've worked my entire life for. And, you know, I'm really excited to stay in the Blue Jackets organization. Obviously, it was a long and crazy summer because of the pandemic. You know, things weren't happening super fast, and I'm just really excited that I'm going to get this chance, and I'm going to stay in the organization because of, you know, there's guys like Chris Clark, who I know pretty well, and he followed me through my career and in college and helped develop me. So, you know, he's somebody that I trust, and I'm excited for the chance. I really want to get going.
You just mentioned a crazy summer. What have you actually been doing since you stopped playing hockey at Ohio State?
So I just been training, skating. For a while there, we couldn't do either because of the lockdown. But I was able to take a family vacation down to Hilton Head. My grandparents have a house down there, so we visited them once. And I've been doing my master's. I'm getting my MBA online through Cincinnati in the downtime, just because I figured, why not? I got plenty of time right now. But other than that, just kind of spending time with family, hanging out with some of my friends from OSU. I think we've tried every coffee shop in the city at this point.
What are you getting a master's in?
Business administration.
Very good. You know, isn't it funny? And again, you're just starting in the pro ranks here, but because you've played at such a high level for so long and your schedule is set for you, like almost every day your schedule is set. Isn't it amazing that the things that are just kind of routine, mundane things are so, they're such a big deal. And I'm saying that from experience too. I mean, I've had time to do things that I haven't had time to do in years. And yes, I'd rather be doing my job. There's no question about that. But it's funny, like taking a trip to go see your grandparents or something. It's like the greatest thing in the world to us who have a set schedule and never get to do that, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm so accustomed to, you know, not having any free weekends, especially at this point in the year. And now I've got to find things to do each weekend. I mean, last Sunday I just went, or yesterday, actually, I just went down with my dad, my grandpa, to the Bengals-Browns games to watch that. So, I mean, there's very few NFL games I've been able to go to, because it usually is at the same time as the hockey season. But, I mean, that was obviously a fun experience.
Yeah, well, and you're lucky too, because it's not like they could pack the stadium. So you were amongst a select group, weren't you?
Yeah, it was pretty. Actually, it was pretty nice. There was no lines anywhere, and nobody was in front of us in the seats, so we could see everything.
Which one of those teams were you pulling for?
I like the Browns, but my dad and grandpa like the Bengals.
So you had a more enjoyable ride home.
Yeah, I sure did.
That's a good point that you bring up about the NFL. What other sports do you watch besides that? Are you kind of into everything, especially in this downtime, or are you watching pretty much everything that's going on?
Yeah, I am. I love the Browns are probably my favorite sports team. And then the Cleveland Indians. And I've gotten into Formula One ever since a bunch of my friends and I watched the Netflix series, Formula One Drive to Survive, and now we watch it every Sunday, and so I've really gotten into that and watching like Lewis Hamilton race, so I do that pretty much every Sunday morning.
And I would imagine that you're excited the Big Ten football has returned.
Yeah, of course Ohio State football with a big win on Saturday, and Penn State upcoming, so that's really fun to watch as well.
Boy, I'll tell you, like the NFL, when you watch it on TV, it still looks pretty much the same to me, I think, the way they shoot the games. But to see Ohio Stadium when they went with a wide shot and there'd be basically nobody in the entire place, that was pretty weird.
Yeah, that's really weird. Like, I mean, like you said, like seeing the Bengals stadium mostly empty. It's nothing different than normal, you know. But the Buckeyes, there's usually, I mean, there's usually not a single empty seat, you know. So that was weird.
Yeah, very, very weird. Okay, so for you, you mentioned that you're working out. You're also doing some skating right now, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I've been skating a couple times a week just with some of the local pros.
Yeah, but when you say some of the local pros, run down the list for me, because this is impressive. This isn't like every guy from Powell that likes to play a little hockey gets to skate in this group. So tell me the group.
So we've got Jack Rossovic, Sean Corrali, both Sherwoods, Kiefer and Cole Sherwood. Connor Murphy skated a few times. Who else do we have? Cole Castles. Riley Nash was there last week. And there's a couple other guys. Andrew Castles is the one who puts it on. And then we've got like Patty Canoni, who played over in Germany last year. And Gianni Evangelisti, who's just turning pro as well, like me. I think that's everybody.
What do you learn from those practices? I mean, just first of all, with Andrew Castles running it, you know, former NHL guy, as you said, you're skating with a lot of guys that are either playing in the NHL or they do have some NHL time. Pace of practice, the way the guys go about things, how much have you been able to learn and pick up from that?
I mean, it's awesome to skate with those guys because, you know, for me, I can compare myself to, you know, where I am compared to their level, because they're all obviously a couple of them are proven NHL players at this point. So it's fun to skate with them, and I can learn a lot from them. You know, like Rossovic's got a ton of skill and creativity on these skill drills we're doing. So it's fun to watch him and maybe try and replicate what he's doing. And then when we do like some scrimmages at the end, just the compete level of everybody, you know, usually Kiefer Sherwood and Cole are going at it, screaming at each other. And, you know, nobody wants to lose even at this, in this little mini game, months away from the season.
Have you also picked their brains just with, you know, maybe some questions about what you might face, what you can look for, any helpful tips that they've been able to give you?
Yeah. Especially Kiefer. I'm really close with Kiefer from our days at Miami. So I talk to him pretty often about that stuff and just kind of what to expect at the next level.
All right, so speaking of the next level, when the day finally comes, when you pull that Cleveland Monsters jersey over your head and you start playing in the American Hockey League, what are some areas of your game that you think are pretty good, but you have to improve upon if you want to take it to another level?
I think my strengths are, you know, I think I've got a really good shot and a quick release, so I can get it off quick. And my hockey sense, probably. I think the game really well. So I think those two things are going to help me at this next level, as well as just my compete and working hard. The one thing I definitely need to improve on, and I've been working on it really hard this summer, is my skating, and as well as just putting on weight to be ready for, you know, the professional level and playing against bigger players. So just trying to, you know, get a step quicker than I was last season, and trying to, if you can just get the slightest bit faster each summer, you know, that's a big improvement.
Yeah, and I was going to say, that's the biggest difference as you go up from one level to the next in hockey. It is the speed of which the game moves, and it will move faster in the American Hockey League than at the NCAA Division I level, won't it?
Yeah, definitely. So I got to be ready for that.
Yeah, no question. But, hey, guess what? You're going into when the time comes, you get to go play in a big league city. You still get to be part of a big league organization, which happens to be in your hometown. Things are not so bad for you, my friend.
No, they're looking up. They're pretty good.
Hey, well, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. Again, congratulations on signing that contract. I know it's just the first step in what you hope is going to be a very long journey, and I hope that someday we see you here, not in a preseason game, not just watching a game or doing an interview with me in the press box, but see you participating on a regular basis with the Blue Jackets. I really hope that happens for you, Carson.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too.
Well, it is a great story about Carson Meyer. And now let's go from one end of the spectrum, which is a young player just starting his career, to the other end of the spectrum, a 37-year-old centerman who left the only organization he has ever been with to join the Blue Jackets as a free agent. I am talking about Mikko Koivu, the former captain of the Minnesota Wild. Nobody has watched Mikko Koivu play more than Mike Russo, who covers the Minnesota Wild for The Athletic. Mike also covers the entire National Hockey League, so he can not only tell us about Mikko, but he can also give us an idea of when and how the NHL might return to play. I had a chance to catch up with Mike earlier this week. Well, Mike, there are very few people that saw Mikko Koivu play in the National Hockey League more than you, since you cover the Minnesota Wild. Of course, the way things are changing with the Wild, Bill Guerin going in a different direction. Koivu, the former captain of that team, wasn't in the future plans. He has since moved on and signed on here with the Blue Jackets. You know him very well. Tell us how he's going to fit in as a member of the Columbus Blue Jackets.
I think he'll fit in really well. I mean, he's still, to me, one of the best defensive centers in the NHL, and he's somebody that could contribute points. If you need him on the power play, you could do that. He's going to be your, you know, a guy that you're going to throw on the penalty kill very comfortably. You know, block shots, is gritty, gets angry on the ice. And the other thing is, if John Tortorella needs a guy late in the game to take a big draw, you know, Mikko's done that his entire career. You're right. I know him really well. You know, his first day actually with the Minnesota Wild in training camp was my first day covering the team 15 years ago. You know, I'm happy for him. I think that, you know, he said it over again, and I know that he said it to your media when he signed with Columbus, is that, you know, when you want to go out on your own volition. And I think that he felt that he had, when all of a sudden he was essentially for the first time in his career told that you're no longer coming back to Minnesota, which I understand why Billy Guerin did that. I think that to just end his career, I think would have left a pretty sour taste in his mouth. So now he goes and plays for a guy that I think that is going to like him a lot. He's a John Tortorella type player. And he goes, you know, the one thing about Mikko is he's got to be comfortable. And just the fact that Jorma Kekäläinen, who's known him since he was a kid, basically, I think that he's going to go to Columbus and feel very, very comfortable. And again, it's probably going to be for a half season, Bob. So, you know, we'll see. And when I say that, I'm expecting a shortened season. So this isn't a huge commitment from Mikko's standpoint either.
Every time a player joins the Blue Jackets, especially a veteran player who comes in from the outside, the first question always seems to be, how is he going to work with John Tortorella? And you just mentioned, you don't see that being a problem whatsoever. I think this is great for John Tortorella because this has been one of the youngest teams in the league. It seems like every year we're saying that here, Mike, and it just, you know, I've had enough of that. I like the fact that they went and they got an older guy here. Guy, as you said, was something to prove. He's a former captain. Leadership is still something that's needed in this room, and he can bring that, can he?
Absolutely. I mean, he wore a captaincy in Minnesota for 12 years and had it back when Jacques Lemaire also, you know, had monthly captains as well. And, you know, he's going to a team that I do think has great leadership there. And, you know, the one thing is that I'll tell you is that there was a lot of respect here in Minnesota between Mikko Koivu and Marcus Foligno. And I think that right away that, you know, I guarantee you that Mikko did his due diligence and talked to Marcus, talked to Nick Foligno. And I think he's going there and he's going to try to compliment Nick in a lot of different ways. And, you know, Mikko is the type of person, he'll hold guys accountable. I mean, he's not going to come in and scream at guys and do rah-rah speeches, but what he will do is that there will be nobody that works harder on the ice in practice than Mikko Koivu. That was what was his common denominator for years here in Minnesota. And I think what John Tortorella is going to love about him is that he's going to set that example on the ice. And if he sees a young guy not working hard in practice, he'll not only get in his face and tell him that he needs to work harder, he'll bump him around in practice and things like that. So his work ethic is long been, you know, a staple of Mikko Koivu. And the other thing is that he does not cheat offensively. He's somebody that takes care of his own end, is great in the neutral zone. And again, you know, I know his age made a lot of Blue Jackets fans nervous, the ones that at least tweeted me. But I can tell you, if you look at the analytics, there's still few players in the league that's as functional defensively than Mikko Koivu. Opponents hate playing against him. And so I think it's going to be a good fit.
You know, it's funny when you talk about his age. There was a time where, as if you were 37 years old, this was just the kind of guy that playoff-type teams were looking for that leadership and for, you know, their last chance in trying to go out on top. Now, because the league is so doggone young, you start to look at guys over 33, 34, and you go, ah, he's too old to play.
Yeah, no doubt. We're seeing it here in Minnesota with guys like Ryan Suter and Zach Parise, people looking at 35 and 36, and, you know, Ryan Suter is somebody that could probably play to 50, and Zach is still their leading goal scorer. And with Mikko, look, you know, it was Mikko's a proud hockey player, and you know, when all of a sudden he started to slow down this last year, year and a half, and getting off the power play and playing even in a fourth line role, I think that that hurt him. And I think that he's going to go there and be a quality, you know, wherever John wants to put him, I think he's going to be a quality third line guy. But he's somebody, even though he's not the fleetest of foot anymore, he makes up for it for just being a pain in the butt to play against. And you know, he's somebody, again, you look at his stats in Minnesota, he's the all-time leader in games played, in points and assists and power play points and everything. And now he's gotten up there in age. He's had to adjust because this is a younger, faster league, and he's going to a team that is a young, fast team as well. But I think that he's going to go to Columbus, and his goal is to help a team in a playoff. And again, if we are going to see a shortened season, by the time the playoffs come around, Mikko Koivu is going to be a pretty fresh player. And I think that when you have a player that's 37 years old to all of a sudden start the playoffs around the 45, 50 game mark, as opposed to the 82 game mark, that can only help Columbus.
You're a guy that you watch the Wild primarily, but you are, you've got a larger eye on the entire league. You saw what the Blue Jackets did or what they have done to this point so far. Do you like the moves that have been made here?
I like Yarmo, and I trust Yarmo, and I think I love that 2 years ago they went for it. It didn't work out, but, you know, he's revamped that team, and, you know, they got a couple great goalies. You know, to me, there's a lot of young players to build around, and then you go out and you get Max Domi, who I think is a very good center, to go in there or play win. I mean, one of the two, and I think that he's somebody that can go there and help the Columbus Blue Jackets. You know, John Tortorella is a proven winner in this league. He's somebody that I know – you know, it strives to win another Stanley Cup. And I think that Columbus is in a position now where they just seem to be on the rise. I really do like the moves that Yarmo's making.
Now, on the other side, you've mentioned the decisions that Bill Guerin is making now as the general manager of the Minnesota Wild. It was kind of rocky there for a couple of years in that GM position. It looks like they got it right with Billy Guerin. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think so. He brings accountability. And the one thing he's not afraid to do is just tear it all to pieces. And I think that, you know, it's funny, Wild fans for years, I think they've wanted a grenade thrown in that locker room. And then all of a sudden, Billy tore the team apart. And they're like, what is he doing? Well, you've been asking for this. Good is not good enough for Billy Guerin. At some point, he had to change the core. And he's done that. And they're, you know, they're not calling it a rebuild, but they're clearly in a rebuild here, Bob. And, you know, when you trade Eric Staal, when you trade Luke Cunnan, when you trade Devin Dubnyk and Ryan Donato, when you let Mikko Koivu go, you know, this is a team that's clearly going to have new faces in there. And the other thing that he's done is, from a flexibility standpoint, he has a lot of guys on one-year deals left. And so, you know, he's going to have the ability next offseason to have roster flexibility and cap space. So, you know, I really do trust that Billy's got a plan here. He's trying to build through the draft, which is something that this organization hasn't done in many, many years. I mean, you know, Chuck Fletcher was always, an understandably, in a win-now mode, and it just didn't work. And so now what we saw with first Paul Fenton and now Billy Guerin is that we're seeing the core of the team pretty much adios, and we'll see if it works. It's going to be, I think, a transition year for the Minnesota Wild. You know, I don't see them being a team that, that, you know, is a true cup contender, which is another reason why I think that this was a good opportunity for Mikko Koivu. Now he's going to have a chance to go win somewhere else.
Talking with Mike Russo, he works for The Athletic and covers the Minnesota Wild and covers the entire National Hockey League. And Mike, with these two teams coming in at the same time as expansion teams, this was set to be a big celebration year for both. As a matter of fact, the Wild was going to really be celebrating on New Year's Day, playing in the Winter Classic outside at Target Field in Minneapolis. As we know, last week that got canceled along with the NHL All-Star Game. How disappointing is it that, well, first of all this is going on, so this is disappointing to all of us, but for these two franchises, and when you're looking to do a lot of things outside and around the game, you're not going to be able to do much of that.
Yeah, you know, you said it, Bob. Aaron Portsline, my colleague at The Athletic in Columbus, he and I had a lot of plans this year to do a lot of things in concert to sort of, you know, celebrate the 20-year anniversaries of both the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Minnesota Wild. We started it back in June on the anniversaries, the 20-year anniversaries of the entry draft and the expansion draft. We, you know, did some really nice pieces looking back at those, talking to the principals like Doug McLean and Doug Risebrough and people like that to do those stories. And Now all of a sudden, we don't even know how many games are going to be next year, when it's going to start, if they're going to be fans in the building. You know, I'm hearing that we're going to start in bubbles. So it's a tough year. And as you mentioned, the Winter Classic was going to be sort of the celebration of that here in the state of hockey. Having a brand new fresh jersey, playing at Target Field against a rival in the St. Louis Blues. And now that's going to be postponed at least a year. So it's disappointing. I think Aaron and I will come up with some good content at some point to do together, but it's certainly not the 20-year anniversaries that I think the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Minnesota Wild hierarchies ever envisioned. That's for sure.
All right, let's talk about what the season might look like, because last week you had a great story that you wrote for The Athletic where you talked to Bill Daly, the deputy commissioner of the National Hockey League, talked about like pretty much everything is on the table. I'm sure there are some plans that are ahead of other plans, and they're not going to come out and tell you exactly what those plans are right now. But let's start with the hub city plan. You mentioned bubble. It's not going to be like it was during the playoffs. It'll be more like what we're seeing in the NFL and Major League Baseball, right?
Yeah, the only difference, though, is that in Major League Baseball and the NFL, the league sort of said, get on your plane and go and good luck. And we're not going to see that in the NHL. It's going to start – I got to get out of the habit, you're right, Bob, of saying bubbles, but they're going to be sort of modified bubbles, hubs. And again, this is, as you mentioned, this is not set in stone. This is sort of just the leading contender that I believe the league and the PA are talking about behind the scenes, and eventually the joint committee between the NHL and 10 players from the NHLPA will get together and start hashing this stuff out. But look, I don't think when the CBA was extended in July that anybody envisioned that still in July that we'd be in a position where every jurisdiction in this country and Canada would not allow fans in the building. Some are, some aren't, to certain degrees. Some, like Minnesota, absolutely not. Some, like in Texas, it's like, you know, here, you can put 20% of the fans in the building. And so the league is not going to do that. So what they're going to do is they're going to, because the Canadian border right now is closed, the leading contender is have an all-Canadian division and then take the 24 other teams in the United States, realign those divisions, and then have hubs where those eight teams in each division will go and play. And you would have 4 to 6 teams in a hub. It won't be as strict. It won't be walled off. These teams, every week, there'll be one or two teams that go out, one or two teams that come in. And now the next step is to see who's in what division and what hubs are the hosts. And this could affect the Columbus Blue Jackets dramatically. The one thing that I said that I wrote is the one plan that is gaining traction is a new realigned central division, where you would have teams in the central minus Colorado, Dallas, and Minnesota, but add some Eastern Conference teams like Columbus, like Detroit, like Carolina, potentially like Tampa and like Florida. And then the question is, where are the hubs? And as we saw during the return to play this past summer, Columbus makes all the sense in the world, just because Nationwide Arena has the practice facility attached, incredible restaurant district right there, hotels right around the radius between the Hyatt and the Crown Plaza, and of course the Hilton, where a lot of teams play, the Renaissance. There's tons of hotels in downtown Columbus, so it makes a lot of sense, and the league wants to make sure that the hotel that could house 4 to 6 teams would be right near the arena. So we'll see if Columbus gets that. We'll see if they do this plan, but that right now is sort of the contender that I'm hearing. But as you mentioned, Bob, Bill Daly made it extremely clear to me that they have 14 or 15 different scenarios that they're going to discuss with the Players Association. And in his mind, there's not one that's more likely than the other.
Did you ask him by any chance that if they go that route, would the home team, they were talking about in the playoffs, like a home team not playing in their home building, which of course it turned out that they did do that. But, you know, let's say it's Columbus. Would those players be able to go home every night, whereas the teams that they're playing against, they've got to stay in a hotel for a week or two?
Yeah, that's a good question. I did not ask him that. My gut says that they would have to be in a hotel. I think the goal here is to have some level of testing, but not allow these players, but control the environment. And so to control the environment, you can't have 23 players on one team just going home to their families. So my gut says that they would be staying in a hotel as well. But again, the goal is that every week or so after playing 4 or 5 games, you know, one or two teams go out. So it wouldn't be like the Blue Jackets players or any team would be in a hotel for 2 or 3 weeks at a time. That's not something that the league isn't willing to do, and the players certainly aren't willing to vote on right now.
Did you also get the sense that if they start this way, if there's a flexibility, depending upon what happens in every city in the league, You can't restructure divisions once you set them up. I get that. But is there any chance of getting back to some semblance of normal play and teams going back into the regular buildings by the end of the year with fans?
Yep, that is certainly the goal. You know, both Bill Daly and my sources at the NHL Players Associations have made it extremely clear that there's going to need to be flexibility and that the way that things start is not necessarily the way that things end. The goal here is to get fans in the building. I mean, just imagine the amount of money that these owners are going to be paying in terms of payroll without getting any revenue back other than maybe TV deals from the local and national TV deals and merchandise and things like that. But that it is still a lot of, you're going to make a lot or lose a lot less money by not playing than playing. So the goal is to eventually get back to a point where they can open up 31 buildings and then in some capacity have some fans in the stands. Now, I don't think that we're ever going to get to a point unless there is a distributed vaccine that's guaranteed to work by the summertime, which I don't see how it's humanly possible to just constantly distribute that. I think that the goal is to, essentially get people into positions where the local jurisdictions allow some fans in the building. But to do that, we're probably not going to see a full, say they play 50 games, we're not going to see a 50-game schedule come out at the beginning. I could see it coming out in sort of 2 to 3 weeks, maybe one rotation of each hub, and then sort of revisit it, because the goal is to eventually get out of these bubbles and go back to the arenas. And we'll see if it ever happens. The other thing that potentially could happen, but it would be costly, is we're seeing it right now. There's a pilot program in Canada where international travels, once they arrive, they take a rapid test at the border, and then they can get out of the 14-day quarantine if in the next week they take another test that's negative. I wonder if the league could ever get to a point. They were able to get commandeer all these tests for these bubbles this summer. Is there a way to get these rapid tests into arenas where essentially, say in Columbus, say there was ever an approval where you could have 20% of your capacity go to a game, could there be rapid tests upon entry where fans essentially, to get into the building, also have to take a rapid test? In 15 minutes, you find out if you're positive or negative, and then you can gain entry. You know, that might be the bridge between getting fans in the building and a vaccine that's distributed to the entire country.
All right, and what about this scenario too? Because you mentioned Texas, where we're watching the World Series. There are people in the building. It's not full, but actually, in today's world, there's quite a lot of people in that building.
Yeah,
really. So let's say you've got a division where you're talking about Minnesota being in with Dallas. If the Blue Jackets are in the Central Division, there are two Florida teams there. Florida's another one of those states where they seem to be open to letting people in for these sporting events. And I guess it's what I'm going to ask you. I was going to ask you, is it possible that could you do it there? Could you open it to fans? Could you maybe do some kind of a split between owners for whatever money that you are getting? Yeah. But then I guess the flip side of that is, what are you going to do with the other division in the East where you've got Pittsburgh, Philly, Pennsylvania is doing nothing. You've got four teams in New York State. Forget about it. And then when you get out West, you go to California, you're not getting in anywhere in California. So I guess there's an unfairness there.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I think the league would be willing to open up hubs to fans if those jurisdictions allowed it. I think it has to be worth it because it's extremely costly to put on a game. And if all of a sudden in Texas you have, I'm just making this up, but on a Tuesday afternoon, you have the LA Kings playing the Arizona Coyotes, the cost of putting on that game with the minuscule fans that be coming in, it might not be worth it. But the one thing that you said that piqued my interest, Bob, is you don't necessarily have to have each of the divisions in a hub in their market or in the actual division. So, theoretically, let's just say California opened up. You could put three United States teams, divisions in hubs in California. Obviously, California is not opening up, but you get my drift. It doesn't necessarily, like, to me, you don't have to have the Atlantic and Metro, the new Atlantic Metro in Buffalo or the new Central in Columbus. If you can put one in Florida, one in Tampa, one in Texas, it doesn't really matter if your home fans aren't getting in the building anyway, but you can open it, you can get some sort of revenue. But you're right, to do that, there would have to be some sort of revenue split that they would allow that. And obviously we're spitballing here. This is stuff that who knows if it's even something that could ever happen. But I think the one thing the league has made extremely clear to me is that they're not going to get to a point where they, you know, just like allow teams to essentially go back and forth between home and go to their, you know, go to if the Minnesota's playing Columbus, go to Columbus. And then if Minnesota's playing Nashville, go to Nashville. They're not going to just say good luck and be like baseball and football where just, you know, every single day it feels like the NFL is announcing positive tests throughout the league. They're not going to get to that point.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting. You know, to go back to what we were just talking about, we both are living in climates where if your team was playing in Dallas or if your team was playing in Florida, I think your fans would go there to watch him play. And quite frankly, the way they're talking about setting it up is you could go down there and now you're not just going down for one game like you would during the regular season. You could potentially go and watch three or four games.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And I think this is probably what Bill Daly meant when they said they have like 15 or 20 different scenarios that they've got to pick from and you know, make it work. But the one thing that they are extremely, adamant about is that it's going to be up to the federal and local jurisdictions, and they're not going to just put people in harm's way. And I think there is a moral issue here from the NHL standpoint, is that I don't think they want to get to a point where just – they almost create an outbreak by saying, all right, we're going to have hubs in all the places where some fans can get to and just put on our games there. And then if all of a sudden you have some sort of COVID outbreak amongst hockey fans, you're the ones blamed. So, you know, my gut says that this thing still starts in three hubs where fans are not allowed in. And then as hopefully we get the pandemic more under control, things can start to relax and the NHL can respond in that way.
Talking to Mike Russo of The Athletic. And what is your best guess as far as the start? Now, when everybody, I think that most everybody, I was on this list, when they canceled the Winter Classic, I thought, well, there goes January 1st. Mm-hmm. That's out the door. Bill Daly told you that's not necessarily the case. How much will the NHL be watching the NBA? Because it seems like they always are in concert. Even if they don't broadcast it, they're in concert. They're always kind of doing things around the same time.
Yep.
The NBA is talking about Christmas time. Do you think if they can pull that off, the NHL is looking at more toward January 1?
Yeah, I think the one big issue that the NHL has compared to the NBA is that there are seven teams in Canada as opposed to one. There is a good chunk of the league, hundreds, that live in Europe compared to the NBA. And I think that really hurts, and also the other thing is from a revenue standpoint, the NHL, who's an exclusive TV rights deal right now with NBC, their TV contract isn't nearly as big as the NBA's as well. And so from a revenue stream, I don't know how much it needs to, you know, let's put it this way. I don't know how much they need to fast track things just to, you know, get back on the ice if the other things they haven't jumped through those hoops. I think the thing is here with the Winter Classic, it was pretty much, postponed, not so much because they weren't targeting January 1 anymore, but it was impossible for the Minnesota Wild to sell the game. Right now in Minnesota, you can't have fans even in outdoor stadiums. And they just, you know, this is a signature event, and you're not going to, even if you could have half the fans in the building, you're not going to do a Winter Classic and invest that type of money in a game like that without fans. So that's the real reason why they canceled that. But in terms of play, you know, I asked Bill Daly when there's a, you know, when's the cutoff date to start January 1? And, you know, he really didn't have an answer for that, but they've got to get moving here. I mean, right now, the joint committee from the NHLPA and the NHL needs to meet. They've got to start figuring this stuff out. I think there is going to be a fight between what the owners want to pay the players and what the players think the CBA spells out to them, what they should be paid, that they thought was rectified over the summertime. And now the owners are starting to scoff at that. But the other thing here is, as I mentioned, is Europe. I mean, you've got to get these players back in the country. And we're here, it's what, October 27th? It's almost November. If you're going to start January 1, training camp's got to start around December 15th. But the seven teams that didn't make the playoffs are going to have a conditioning camp a week, 2 weeks before that. So let's just say it starts December 1st for those seven teams. I mean, eventually, you've got to come to a decision here to start getting these players back into both Canada and the United States. So, you know, I think January 1 is probably pushing it. I think it's more like January 15th. Obviously, we've seen with previous lockouts that the NHL has started games and started return to play in the middle of January. Those were 48-game seasons. I still think if you do these hubs where you have these round robins sort of, you could probably cram in more than 48 games, probably 55, 60 games. But they've got to get moving here. And right now, I think that the NHLPA is finalizing the who's going to be on their joint committee. It's going to be roughly 10 players.
You know, and you mentioned TV just a few moments ago. This is this season is pretty big in the United States because that agreement with NBC is up this year. So the league is going to be looking for a new television deal. They're looking to make a lot more money off the next deal, obviously. So that, how much does that factor into the number of games that they're hoping to play, do you think?
It's a great question. I mean, you know, I actually feel for the league. To, you know, talk about bad luck to have this this $2 billion 10-year deal end in the middle of a pandemic, right? You know, I don't know how much all these TV stations are going to be able to invest in the NHL right now. So, but it's huge because right now NBC technically has the exclusive NHL TV package, and they have the Olympics next summer. And if those Summer Olympics go off as planned, which everything is up in the air in today's world, but right now the Summer Olympics are going off. Well, it's not just that the Summer Olympics are scheduled to start, you know, across the world on July 23rd. The trials, the Olympic trials, start in early July, and that's all across the NBC sports package. So, you know, a lot of us really believe that the NHL is in a position now where they've got to award a cup by June 30th because of this. Unless NBC, who doesn't have a ton of leverage right now, is going to blow them out of the water in this next package, and the NHL or the NHL is able to work out with NBC the ability to extend past June 30th but sign a temporary TV package with one of the other networks, you know, this thing to me has to be done by June 30th. They're still on NBC. So I think it's a huge deal. Right now, again, as you mentioned, Bob, they have exclusive negotiations with NBC, but unless NBC absolutely blows them out of the water, you know, I've got to think that NBC, that the NHL is for post 2020-21 season going to at least go to, you know, channels like Fox, like ESPN, and at least try to negotiate. But that's in the future. Technically, the contract is still on NBC throughout the summer. And, you know, with the conflict of the Olympics, you know, we could very well see a cup by June 30th, which is why a lot of us really believe that this is going to be a shortened season, no matter the number of times Gary Bettman says that he wants to have an 82-game season next year.
Yeah, at some point you've got to, if you want to reset and get back to where you were, I think you're right. It's just common sense. All right, last thing I have for you. If they're able to go back to playing even in hubs, if they can get back into buildings, are people like you and I going to be back allowed in the buildings to do our jobs the way we've always done our jobs?
Well, I hope so, because after 15 years of covering Mikko Koivu, I think Portsline needs to see what it's like to interview him after a loss. It's not pretty. It, in a lot of ways, rivals John Tortorella. So Porty's going to have to start wearing like a helmet in the locker room if he's going to talk to Tortorella than Mikko after a loss. But I really do, you know, to be all serious, I think that part of this modified bubble plan that the NHL has is to allow reporters to cover. There's still going to be social distancing. We still have to wear masks. I don't know if Bob, it's going to be like the old days where right away we get into the locker room, but I do think that we'll get the pleasure of having these face-to-face press conferences with John Tortorella. Again, I know Porty misses the insight and you know, we'll see, but trust me, I'm with you. I'm done with the Zooms. I cannot sit in this office of mine anymore and cover games off my television over there. It's just, I mean, none of us do this job. And we're very lucky to have these jobs. None of us do it to watch games on TV and then write about it from thousands of miles away. You don't want to call games from Nationwide Arena when the team's on the road anymore. And you know, so I think the league is appreciative of all that. And as long as it's safe, they're going to allow us to cover these games.
Very well said. Thank you very much, Mike. I appreciate it. Thanks for the Mikko Koivu insight and for the wrap-up on the league and that conversation you had with Bill Daly. Again, you can find that story just by searching The Athletic. Mike, thanks very much, and hopefully I see you face-to-face soon.
Yep, anytime, Bob.
So there it is, a return to CBJ in 30 as we await the return of training camps and then eventually the return to play. But I do plan on doing this once a week so we can continue to talk hockey, so I can continue to talk to people in the business. And maybe there's somebody that you would like me to talk to. And I'll put no limits on that. So if you have a suggestion, you can send me a tweet at Bobby Mack Sports, or you can send me an email to Bobby Mack, BobbyMac at BlueJackets.com. I'm looking to fill this show each and every week. I've got great ideas. I have fantastic ideas. But in the unlikely case that there's something I haven't thought of, I'm asking you to help out. So again, you can get a hold of me either of those ways. I would like to thank Carson Meyer. I would like to thank Mike Russo for both being a part of today's show. And that's going to do it for today's edition of CBJ in 30, presented by Telhio Credit Union. Until next time, I'm Bob McElligott saying so long.